This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Full night of sports last night. You got baseball. You have two games yesterday. And then, of course, Monday Night Football. We're going to get to the Monday Night Football first as the Dallas Cowboys beat the Chargers 20-17. Look, it's early in the season, but I know in Dallas's mind, it wasn't a must win. It's a tight term, but it is a win you kind of needed to have if you're Dallas. You're coming off an embarrassing loss in San Francisco. You don't want it to become a trend. But the other important thing is when you looked around the NFC, both San Francisco and Philadelphia lost. So you kind of want to take advantage of that and get a victory. Now, would the season have been over? Of course not. And the same thing with the Chargers, too. The Chargers were coming off a bye week. They are 2-2. And so it's a very important game, but it doesn't carry the level of significance that we're going to see later on in the season. Nevertheless, it was a game I think both teams really felt like they would really, really like to have, given the current circumstances that they're in. And for Dallas, I think it was a statement of, we've got to take a bad performance and shove it aside. Now, I didn't think both teams played particularly well. I think there were mistakes on both sides. They were, it depends on how you look at it, too. I mean, both failed on fourth down. There was a muffed punt that led to a Chargers touchdown. Justin Herbert was throwing it all over the place. He was very erratic. But in the end, it's a win for Dallas that they can go, all right, we're not going to slide backwards. And it's a good win for Dak Prescott, who was feeling a tremendous amount of heat after going to Santa Clara and being embarrassed by the 49ers. But like I said, it wasn't a standout game by either team. And that's the question. The other question is going to be about the Chargers. Now, look, Dallas is going to get all the national buzz because they're Dallas. That's just the way it is. And like I said about Dak Prescott, he's in this weird position as a quarterback because the Cowboy quarterback is one of the more scrutinized positions in all of sports. He's playing well, or he needs to be out of the league right now. There's no middle ground how people feel about Dak Prescott. But on the flip side of this, this Chargers team is too good and too talented to be 2-3. And I think that's where I'm coming down on. They are a football team with a star quarterback. They have players on the offensive side and the defensive side. They may not have the right head coach. And that is something that is starting to get more and more apparent. When you build a roster together in the National Football League, you better make sure it's guided by the right guy, because it doesn't last forever. Eventually players move on. Eventually you lose those players. You lose that cohesiveness. And if you best make sure it is guided in by the right person. I don't know if Brandon Staley is the right person. This could be a back and forth season all year for the Chargers, where they lose some games at home. They win some games they shouldn't. It could be that. But in the end, they're not going to reach the upper echelon of the AFC. They're not going to be one of those teams that is peaking at the right time if they keep going back and forth with games like this. Again, it's a team that can switch it around. That's the great thing about it. When you have talent, it can be switched around. You're not looking at a team last night, for example, that was playing the very, very best they possibly could play, and they lose 20-17. That game could have gone their way. Same with Dallas. That game could have gone even more their way. Both teams just made some mistakes here. But it wasn't a great Monday Night Football game in terms of its execution, but I think it was a game that was close enough that caught your attention until the end. Now, as for baseball, boy, you got to be careful in these series, because both of these series yesterday got off to rocking starts. Framber Valdez blew up for the Astros as Texas got on the board early in that game, held off a late Houston charge, and now Texas is leading that series 2-0. They scored 4 runs in the first inning. Before you had a chance to get home from work, the Rangers were up 4-0. But at Minute Maid Park, that's not a safe lead. Even when it was 5-1, that's not a safe lead. And the Astros found their way coming back. Alex Bregman hit a home run. Yordan Alvarez hit a home run that made it even tighter. But the Texas Rangers are now up 2-0 going to Arlington. And then again, last night, if you were settling in to watch the Phillies and the Diamondbacks, you end up with a game where right off the bat, Kyle Schwarber, a leadoff home run. Bryce Harper then says, oh, I'll do that too. Nick Castellanos hits a home run in the second inning. And by the way, those guys have been hitting home runs all postseason. It's like 8 combined. And all of a sudden, the Phillies are putting up a bunch of runs on the board against the Diamondbacks. They're up 5-0. But Arizona, I'll give them credit. They came crawling back into that game. Just in the end, it wasn't enough. But both of the teams that lost yesterday fought their way back from early deficits. I think in Arizona's case, it was something that we saw in the Dodgers series where they were able to get a bunch of runs very early and hold. Now they tried, you know, they were playing catch up last night and it wasn't enough at Citizens Bank Park. A couple of things on that. One, the environment in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is one of the better sports towns in America. It's one of those northeastern kind of towns that people, you know, can really get on their team, get angry about their team, very passionate. But they have a very electric atmosphere at that ballpark. That really was, it's a really cool place to watch a game from a television standpoint, because it feels like the crowd is even louder than in other places. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's sold out at Minute Maid. It's going to be sold out in Arlington. It'll be sold out at Chase Field. But Citizen Bank Park really kind of gives you a great baseball feel in a very good baseball city. And you can feel that the players on the Phillies feeding off of that. I mean, this is what the Phillies do, right? They got great pitching from Zach Wheeler. He went 6 innings. He struck out 8. He allowed 2 runs. Their bullpen was good. They did make a mistake. Sir Anthony Dominguez did make an error that led to a Diamondbacks run. But Alvarado came in, closed that door. Kimbrel came in. He closed that door. And the Phillies now take the first game of this series. I will not discount the Diamondbacks, though, in this series on a 7 games going and what it's going back to Phoenix. I know the narrative is going to be Philadelphia is an experienced team that went to the World Series last year, and the Diamondbacks are still a year or two away from where they were, where they're headed. I didn't see that last night. I still did not see enough. I didn't see the kind of quit in Arizona. They really did try to crawl their way back in the game. Had a number of times where they had an opportunity. They had the tying run at the plate, but again, a ground out double play that ended the game, and that was it. So a very, very busy night in sports last night. We're going to get to a lot of it. We're going to dissect more into the Monday Night Football and where everyone wants to be on this game. I mean, it is week 6. It is not week 15. But it did feel like both teams were like, look, we really need this. We really need this. And the Cowboys got it. So the Cowboys end up returning from, again, a California run of 2 games where they were embarrassed, but then pick up the win last night against the Chargers. And unfortunately for the Chargers, and I don't, Ron, I don't know how you feel about your team, because I think they're too talented to be 2-3. And I think that they're not a 2-3, like a typical 2-3 team.
Agree.
They're not. If you're 2-3, like the Titans, you got problems because you're not that good.
Right.
But this is not that. They're 2-3 with an outstanding quarterback that was erratic all night, and a team that's loaded with players.
I don't know if he didn't get a good night's sleep or what it was last night. I mean, he didn't play well at all.
No,
and I mean and for the Chargers themselves, I mean, it's just I don't understand how they can look great on some drives and then look terrible in others. And that's the thing. I don't look at it from game to game. Because they haven't put a consistent game together yet.
Right.
But they've looked amazing during the game, like almost unstoppable, unbeatable on both sides of the ball. And then on the flip side of it, you know, they just look like absolute dog. You know what?
Yeah.
I mean, that one drive, that one touchdown drive cracks me up because, well, they got a 15-yard penalty. Cowboys committed a 15-yard personal foul penalty that moved the ball up. Then they couldn't get a first down. They punt it. Then the Cowboys muff the punt, and they're able to get the ball back, go 20 yards to score a touchdown. That's really what that touchdown drive was. It was nothing that they did spectacular. It was just, you know, took advantage of a poor situation and were able to capitalize on it. And even then, that touchdown pass, I mean, Justin Herbert was late.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have made it a lot easier. Yeah, God.
I mean, he's got the hand injury on the non-throwing hand.
Yep.
And yet he was all over the place last
night. I don't know if it was because he was he took every snap in a shotgun.
Yeah, maybe that.
I don't know.
I mean, but he was very erratic.
I mean, he didn't utilize Eckler like I thought he would. I thought Eckler was going to be a much bigger player. And I get it. You know, that Cowboys front line, they're beasts.
They are good.
You're not,
that's true.
They're fast. They're quick. You're not going to be able to do swing, swing pitches out, to the outside. Dumping it off in the flat, I thought you would have a better chance of doing that. I don't know. The two that, to Keenan Allen, that were completely missed is just beyond me.
Yeah. 22 of 37. Herbert ends up with 227 with two touchdowns and an interception. Prescott was 21 of 30, 272. And also with the touchdown, he also ran
for a
score.
And that's the thing that bothers me, too, is that I'm going to say it's the Chargers because every single time I watch them play, they always seem to do this. They make it look so easy for a quarterback to find their star receiver. Whether it's Mahomes to Kelce, whether it was last night, Prescott to CeeDee Lamb.
Right.
They make it look like he's wide open all the time. And it looks like it was like, oh, this is how you draw up the play. This is perfect. And I don't get why that's the case all the time with them.
I understand the national narrative on Dallas. Dallas is always going to get that sort of attention, right? That's kind of what they are. That's what it is. But it is time to look at the Chargers and not appreciate it when they're good and then just kind of roll our eyes when they're not good. That this team should be good.
Yes.
This team should be very good.
I mean, I'm not saying they should be undefeated. I'm not even saying they should be 5-1 or.
But these losses that they've had are all close.
Yeah, they are.
They could be 5-1.
They could be.
Right? I mean, they're the only team to have played with Miami this year outside of Buffalo who beat them. They're a tight win, a tight loss there, a tight loss at Tennessee, a tight loss last night.
Then I hate to say it, but you got to point your finger at the coach.
I think so, too. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue Football Tuesday and baseball as well as we continue.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so now that week 6 is done in the National Football League, really we'll have a top 5, bottom 5 coming up later on in the show today. So Monday Night Football goes Dallas's way, 20-17. It's weird to feel like who needed it more. I think that's a kind of a weird way to put that. It seems that's what people are going with the angle this morning. Who needed this win more? I don't think the Chargers needed it more or the Cowboys needed it more. I think psychologically they were both trying to get into that to move into a certain category, if you will. Like the Chargers wanted to get to 3-2. Like, where are we got a winning record? The Cowboys, I think, were like, let's just shake off a loss to San Francisco and let's get back to work. I don't think there was like, it's weird this time of year. I know that these games are valuable, but there's going to be a jumble towards the end that's going to be shaked out, right? You can't put a value onto these early games as definitive. They just come back to haunt you later, right? I mean, this loss could mean, the Chargers came one game short of the wild card. And it was just because, they lost it. You could point to a number of losses. But if you're a Chargers fan, Ron, and you are, let's say the Chargers miss out, right, on one game. Like, if they had won one more game, they would have been in and they were out. Would you be remembering this one, or would you be remembering, like, the Titans in week 2? A game like that. It's hard to put your finger on exactly where or which game you missed out on. And the same thing, I know Dallas, you want to stay, you want to keep pace with the Eagles, you want to keep pace with the 49ers who both lost over the weekend. They're now 5-1, you're 4-2. It's a good win. It puts you kind of in pace into that running. But for the Chargers, I think in the end, I wouldn't want to be swimming around with a bunch of teams by playing mediocre football when I'm better than that.
No, right? I think missed opportunities. I mean, you're right. Titans are definitely a missed opportunity. We should not have lost that game. Should not have even been that close. I would even venture to almost even say, like, the Dolphins game too. It's just, if you do a few more things on, I mean, I know it's kind of hard to go back and say, that was just an epic game to kick off the season. But it almost feels like it sets the tone as well.
Yeah, and I just don't think this is one of those games where you go, it was a missed opportunity. It was a back-and-forth game. I mean, the Chargers didn't blow anything. They didn't blow a 27-0 lead or anything like that. It was back-and-forth.
And that's been part of the problem. It's the stigma that's coming with them. And it's the stigma with Brandon Staley. And you make the playoffs, last year, you know, I mean, let's go 2 years prior to that. You know, the one that you love the most. You just need to tie the game to get in.
Yeah, right.
You know, and you make a mistake. You know, you call a timeout. And where even Chargers players are sitting there going, I don't know why we called a timeout. I'm not even sure what happened there.
That was one of those games where I was afraid football coach was creeping into stuff. Like, you're just so engulfed in the moment,
yeah.
You kind of forget the bigger picture.
So
the bigger picture was just get out of here with a tie and get into the playoffs. Who cares?
And that happens, and then, you know, you move on to the next. It's like, all right, well, you know, the next season, you finally make the playoffs. And you get the Jacksonville Jaguars out of the three possibilities of a team you want to play. That's the team you want to play.
Right.
You know, you don't want to play. Who were the other? It was the Bengals and the Bills, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. You want to play the Jaguars, and you got the Jaguars, and you're destroying them until the second half,
and then 27-0.
Yeah. You know, fast forward to this season, yeah, with the Titans. I mean, you're playing great against the Titans, and you just let them come back slowly but surely, just claw their way back in. And even though the game wasn't like that last night, you just get that feeling. I mean, they had that opening drive where they just drove down the field like it was nothing. You know, they were playing great. They were spreading the ball around. They were mixing up the runs and the passes, and it looked fluid all the way down. And then you just, all of a sudden, it's like all that stops, and you're almost relying on the Cowboys to beat themselves. There was the second or third drive they had of the game, where the only reason why the drive kept going was the Cowboys kept making dumb penalties.
Yeah, the penalties last night were killing Dallas.
Yeah.
Killing Dallas last night.
And then, but that was the first half, and I was ready for that narrative that, oh, you know what, the NFL office called, they want the Chargers to win. Because there were some of those penalties I was looking at, I was like, I don't even know what they're seeing. I'm feeling bad for the Cowboys. I mean, I'm glad it's happening for my Chargers, but I'm starting to feel bad for the Cowboys. But then the second half is the Chargers started getting all the penalties. And they were making all the dumb mistakes or just getting called for, you know, this and that. And I don't know. I constantly feel like I don't feel like the Chargers are getting beat in a game. I just feel like they are losing the game.
Right. But again, I would give you in this circumstance, you can pinpoint a number of ways in which the Chargers lost this game. But overall, forget last week, the Dallas Cowboys are a good football team.
They are.
They're a good football team. This wasn't a loss to, you know, a rookie QB and a team that's rebuilding, and it was just you hung around with a team you shouldn't have been hanging around with, and you lost. This was a Dallas Cowboy team that's very good. This is a very, very good team. And in a game of sloppy, they were just a little less sloppy, right? I will say this. I don't know who that woman is that they kept showing on TV last night, but she's now showing up in every news article this morning.
Everywhere.
That everybody wants to comment on this game. This awesome Charger fan knows who she is.
Some people were calling her an actress.
Right.
Like, there's no way somebody loves the Chargers that much.
I mean,
then I saw people defending her. It's like, oh, no, she does love the Chargers that much. I mean, she went viral.
So is
and probably has no idea.
I don't know who she is. I was going to post, you know, hey, some Charger PR person, get a hold of this woman and console her with some gifts. But then I'm like, I better not. Maybe she's like the owner's friend or I'm like, maybe she's someone like that's connected to the Chargers. I don't know. I don't know. It's just, she could be an average fan. She could be somebody that knows somebody. She could be the wife of a player. I have no idea. Well, nobody identified her. But hey, listen, love your life like she loves the Chargers. Whatever you're doing, love that like she loves the Chargers.
Yeah.
Because she loves the Chargers.
I mean, she should have been in the locker room at the end of the game.
Yeah.
You know, just sit there and, you know, sitting with the other players just down in the dumps.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
She was fantastic.
She was great. She was really great. But That it just feels to me, I'm trying to put this into some context here. I don't want the Chargers the next couple of years, and you're right, failed to get to the playoffs by needing to tie the Raiders and ended up giving up a field goal, bad timeout, blowing a lead. I don't want this moment, this era, this block of time for the Chargers to go without any currency at the end of it all.
Yeah.
That's what happens in this league. when you put together a really good team and you've got all the pieces and you've got tremendous talent, some are injured, some aren't, but nevertheless, it's a roster that's well built. And in the end, it's an era that is in Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City's universe, but it still should be a team that is in the conversation with Cincinnati, with Buffalo, with Kansas City as being one of the premier teams. They have not shaken off that sort of layer of dirt you want to get off in order to be one of the elite teams. They've got a good quarterback. They've got one of the great quarterbacks in the league. He had a terrible game last night in terms of throwing the ball, but he's still one of the elite quarterbacks in the league. They've got great talent. It just might not be run by the right guy. That's what I get. By the way, in that 27-0 playoff loss to Jacksonville, did Brandon Staley in the post-game conference go, "I got to ask my players whether or not they love it or like it. Are they all in or they're not all in?" Because I wonder how that would have went down. You blow a 27-0 lead. Because they're loving Deion's speech at the end of that game against Stanford. Are you liking it or are you in love with it? Imagine if Staley pulled that one off at the end of that one.
Yeah.
He would have been fired on the tarmac.
He needs to be fired. He needed to be fired last year.
If he got up and said, "It's not me, it's them," and their love for the game, he would have been fired on the tarmac in Jacksonville. Deion, people are saying this might be one of the greatest post-game speeches ever given by anybody ever in the history of sports. His post-Stanford loss comments, waxing poetically about love and being all in and being committed and understanding the moment. Boy, Deion can't do anything wrong. He cannot do anything wrong to some people. He's gonna ride that to the finish line of life. But nevertheless, baseball, we'll get to that coming up next with the two games yesterday, two games that got off to a very, very, very quick start for both the Texas Rangers and the Philadelphia Phillies. The Rangers now up 2-0. The Phillies take the opening game of the NLCS. I will say one thing about baseball, and we'll get to some of the details of these games, but make it very clear. Everything they did in this offseason, last offseason, to get these games faster and quicker is working. That last night's game, they should be still playing it, for crying out loud, in the old days. But that thing was wrapped up pretty quickly, and then you ended up with almost a full quarter of football to watch. Great move by Major League Baseball to tighten things up. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so I was perusing this morning Facebook memories. I always like to go back and see what I was posting. But it also, I post a lot about sports, so it helps me with, like, what happened on this date kind of thing. So sometimes I'll post something like, this is the anniversary of this, this is the anniversary of that. And so I a number of years ago, I had posted on this date, this is the anniversary of the 1969 Mets winning the World Series, the amazing Mets that kind of came out of nowhere, beat Baltimore. And my cousin Scott, who is a diehard Mets fan, since he was a little kid, had pointed out how, he just made a comment about how quick the games were. He was talking about 2 hours, 2 hour games and stuff like that back in the day. And, it was kind of like, when I posted it, it was like, yeah, I wish it was like that now, because games were going well past midnight. ALCSs were ending at like 12:30 at night on the East Coast. And we were in a position where we're getting 4.5 hour baseball games. And I'm noticing now we are not getting that in the postseason. I thought we would. I thought we would get a little bit slower games in the postseason. We're not. Last night's game between the Phillies and the Diamondbacks wrapped up with enough time to jump over to get almost a full quarter of Monday Night Football. Now, I was watching it on both on split screens, but let's say I was a, diehard Phillies fan, interested in the Cowboys and Chargers just because it's football, but neither one of those teams is my thing. I can watch that and get the ending of Monday Night Football. Boy, in the old days, you had to choose. It was one or the other. You weren't getting both. And Monday Night Football, it starts later than the baseball game, but the baseball game would go 4+ hours easy, a 9-inning game. So I will say, we talked about it all season long, that baseball needed to do something, and they did it. Congratulations to them, because they've got a faster game, and that's really important. Whether we like it or not, the next generation is going to tell you, and they're going to tell whatever it is, right? Whatever entities are out there, movies, sports, television, whatever entertainment, exactly what they want. And they're not going to consume you if they don't like what you are offering them. This generation that is coming up has a shorter attention span. They are not going to sit through a 4.5 hour baseball game, especially if it's two teams they don't care about, but just because it's baseball, they'll watch. But if you give them something tight and compact and entertaining, they will consume the product. Now, it's not the be-all, end-all. Don't get me wrong. The be-all, end-all of baseball's problems with the next generation are not time. But at least it's heading in the right direction. You cannot drag the American public into past midnight baseball games that the timelessness of the sport is the beauty of the sport. They realized that. They fixed it. And now these games are going pretty good. They're going really quick. They got a good pace to them. You know, clock on the pitches. Get that going. Don't let a guy stand on that mound for 3 minutes. Let's go. Let's play baseball. Let's go. Let's get the ball in play. Let's play. Let's tighten this up. And they did. They did. So but boy, you better be careful in these series, because both of these games yesterday, before you even plop down, Kyle Schwarber's hitting the first pitch out of Citizens Bank Park. Bryce Harper's knocking one out. The Texas Rangers are putting runs on the board at Minute Maid Park. But those games, again, I said this earlier, those games, both of those teams, the Diamondbacks and the Astros, came back in those games to make them really interesting. Really interesting. But in the end, I like the way Bruce Bochy, for example, stuck with Nate Eovaldi. Got out of a bases-loaded jam, stuck with him. But the Astros were chipping away, and you got to be careful with them, because they can hit you from every part of their lineup. And they certainly did. Yordan Alvarez hit a home run. Alex Bregman hit a home run. They tightened that game up. But in the end, the Texas Rangers hold on. And the Phillies got off to a fast start. Diamondbacks crept back into that thing. Had the tying run at the plate. But ground out, double play. That ends it. Krimble came in. And I feel like he's in every postseason. Craig Krimble? I feel like, was he with the Red Sox? And then wasn't he with somebody else?
Oh God, he's
been
with...
Was he ever on the Dodgers? Yeah. I don't think he was.
I don't think he was with the Dodgers.
I might have to look him up, because I feel like I've seen him, because he's, you know, got that.
Oh, he's been everywhere. Yeah, he's been everywhere.
Every October, he's on some team that is in October for the last 5 or 6 years now. A lot of it's, again, he was with the Red Sox, and now he's been with the Phillies, but I'm thinking there was one other team in the middle.
Oh, no, he's. No, he. You ready for the list?
Yeah, give me the list.
Okay, so he started off with the Braves.
Right.
Then the Padres.
Okay.
Red Sox.
Right.
Cubs.
White Sox.
Was with the Dodgers last year.
Okay.
And Phillies.
All right. Very good.
So, I mean, he's bouncing around. But during that entire time, which I don't know why nobody wants to hold on to him, because he's a 9-time All-Star at the same time.
Right.
World Series champion with the Red Sox. He was Rookie of the Year, Rolaids Relief Man of the Year, Delivery Man of the Year, 2 times Reliever of the Year, National League Saves Leader. Yet, what, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 teams?
Yeah. I see them all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I'm looking at this list. Most of these teams during that time have made the postseason.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's so why I might want to see them all the time.
Yeah, you might want to keep them around.
God, somebody take Nick Castellanos' bats and check them, please.
What, not Bryce Harper?
Bryce Harper, too. Him, too. Check both of those.
Yeah, I don't think
just mashing home runs.
You know, the top part, you know, where they cork the bats, just the top part. They might be hollow all the way in the inside with these guys.
They are great. They are playing that kind of baseball that you want to see, where you catch a groove and you carry that groove over and over and over.
Yeah.
Into the
and you know, catch it
series,
at the right time.
Series, you're catching it at the right time. Yeah.
That's the other thing. I mean, when do you want to get hot? You want to get hot right now.
Right.
And yeah, there's not a ball these guys aren't going to smash over the fence.
I mean, just for Castellanos, I mean, how many home runs has he had in the last 3 or 4 games?
I don't, yeah.
5? I mean, he had two games in which he had 2 home runs.
I didn't watch the broadcast. Was anything somber being talked about?
No, there wasn't. No somberness. No somberness that was going on last night. But, no, I'm hoping that the Astros get back in this series. I want to make it a little bit more interesting, losing both games at home.
It doesn't look like it.
Man, I'll tell you right now, Bruce Bochy knows which buttons to press on that Ranger team, man.
Yeah, outside of, and I'm, you know, I'm blanking on the kid's name. He had another home run last night. I mean, just absolutely crushed it. Alvarez, Yordan Alvarez.
Oh, yeah, Yordan Alvarez was great.
Outside of him, the team's not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. He had two hits, two RBIs.
Yeah, but the rest of them, I mean, I think they've left at least 12 men on base in these two games.
Well, I follow a lot of the people within the company in Houston on Twitter, and there was an uneasy feeling about Framber Valdez. And boy, did that come to fruition.
Yep.
Boy, was that justified.
That throw to first that he made.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one, yeah.
I mean, it was so – I mean, the problem I had with it before the ball even went by the first baseman and into right field – the way he just picked it up and went to turn was so lackadaisical. I mean, even if he had thrown it on target, he might have been safe anyways. Because he was taking a sweet, sweet time.
That was Adolis Garcia base hit, Mitch Garver base hit, and Daniel Lowe base hit.
Who? Yeah,
these guys are just coming to the plate, just ripping them into the outfield, scoring runs. Just run, another run, another run, another run, another run.
Yeah.
And then Jonah Heim hits a home run in the third inning, and that gave him the 5-1 cushion. But, you know, the Astros are, you know, look, here's my feeling about the Astros. I don't always feel this way about certain teams. Like, you know, I think if there are certain teams, if they lose the first two games at home, I'm like, this series is done. But I don't feel that way about Houston. I think if you are in your seventh consecutive ALCS, and some of these guys have been there the whole time, some have not, but some have been there the whole time, and if they haven't, they've at least come up through the organization to understand it. I think there is not a feeling of, hey, we're in big, big trouble. Oops, look at us. I think there is a urgency, and there's a feeling like, all right, let's just get it done in Texas. Now, does that mean that Texas can't respond to that? No, but I don't distrust the Astros enough that they can't get back in the series in Arlington. I think this is a well put together team, but Texas, you know, divisional foes, divisional matchups, it works both ways. I mean, the Astros were at 9 out of 13 games. They beat Texas this season, but it didn't mean Texas didn't learn something from that against Houston. And so I think that, Bruce Bochy, I mean, sticking with Nate Eovaldi and that bases loaded jam that he was in, sticking with Eovaldi, that took guts. That took guts. That took a manager really trusting that his starting pitcher was going to get out of that, and he rewarded him. Right? I think he struck out Bregman in that bases loaded jam. If I'm not mistaken.
No, but, I think he got. I don't think he struck Bregman. He got Bregman to ground out to third.
Oh, that's right. Okay, Bregman ground out to third. Who did he strike out then?
Altuve.
Altuve, that's right. Altuve at the top of the order.
Yeah.
The bases loaded jam. That's right.
I mean, you know, Altuve used to be good.
Yeah. We'll continue with Wake Up Call. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Whether it's the baseball games or Monday Night Football, we are reviewing the action in Monday Night Sports as we continue.
Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Hey, by the way, did you see the AP Top 25 yesterday? Air Force, 22nd. What did I tell you? January 1st bowl. They're going to play in a January 1st bowl game. I'm hanging on to that to the end of the season. They're an unbelievable football team. They are one of the top rushing teams in the country. You can't slow them down. In fact, I think they are the number one rushing team in the country. But they allow a group of five team to play in the New Year's Bowl. And they might get that. They just beat Wyoming. That was their dangerous game. Wyoming's pretty good. Now, they've got Boise State at the end of the season. But they've got winnable games from here on out. They are currently 6-0, and winnable games on the way out. They're playing some of the bottom teams too in the Mountain West Conference. But they got Boise State at the NCAA. UNLV is actually playing good. UNLV is playing good. So that could be interesting. But I'm keeping an eye on Air Force as the January 1st bowl team for New Year's Day. Why not? Because all hell's going to break loose next year when we get 12 playoff teams. You know, when we get 12 playoff teams, I don't even know what my bowl season is going to look like. Will any of the bowls even, like, matter? Are they going to be on at the right times? Are we going to be playing the Rose Bowl, like, on January 9th? Or the Rose Bowl want to be locked into January 1st no matter what? First round game. I have no idea what it's going to look like.
I have no idea.
I kind of can't wait to see it in a way. But in a way, I'm going to be like, all right, this could be disruptive.
Like, I want to say there was a concession made with the Rose Bowl.
No, the Rose Bowl was kind of
because they were the last holdout, right?
Yeah, they do want their tradition. They were like, all right, we're not getting the Pac-10, Big Ten matchup like we did back in the 70s, but we do want to play on New Year's Day. We're not moving this thing to like January 9th. So let's figure that out. And they're apparently going to be working on that. So, but, man, you know, traditions and nostalgia and all that stuff in sports, we can't hold on to them very, you know, we can't hold on to them. They have to move with the times. It's tough, I get it, but they have to move with the times. I can remember seeing in the late 80s, the Wrigley Field. Remember when Wrigley Field, it didn't have lights. Remember that? And all of the games were on during the day. And, like, I could come home from school, for example, and if I get WGN on my cable, I could watch a Cubs baseball game when I got home from school because all their games were played, you know, during the day. And I remember that they were going to erect lights because they were like, you know, hey, we got to put some lights here. And I remember there was a protest group. They called themselves Cubs, Citizens United for Baseball in the Sunshine. It was kind of cool. But I remember going, even at a young age, going, I don't think you're going to win. Like, we were moving past these traditions. Like, you're not going to get World Series games on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Right? That's just not the way it's going to be. And the same with college football. It had to move forward. It was too bogged down in too many people that believed in the sanctity of what their bowl meant or what their system was or whatever it was. And you have to change it. We're just talking about that with baseball. The timelessness of baseball wasn't its selling point. It really wasn't. People really don't want to be at a ballpark for 4.5 hours. They want you to get moving. The drama, though, in the postseason, I will say this. The drama of the postseason is in the moments where the anticipation is rising up and you really can't hold on to it. Like when you are in a 2-2 pitch sort of moment with runners on the corner and one out, and there is a lot of anxiety that's going on in the stadium, those moments between pitches are worthy of the sort of drama that sports brings. It is, when you speed it up, you lose that sort of anxiety, but it's a trade-off that works in baseball's favor, way in baseball's favor. But, you know, college football, for example, it hung on to traditions too long. It is amazing. Like, when you think about this, Ron, they've been arguing for a playoff-like system in college football for decades.
Yeah.
Decades. Not recently. This isn't a new thing. People have been arguing in the 70s sort of system.
I was going to say, pre-BCS, they were even arguing for a playoff. And then
they've been wanting this for a long time.
Then they say, okay, instead of a playoff, we'll give you a computer to generate. That's not right.
And it's amazing to me that if you went back in the 70s and you told some of the pundits that were like, we got to do something, we want something, or even the 80s, and they said, oh, yeah, don't worry, it's coming, 2024. I mean, people then would have been like, oh, are they playing on the moon? Like, 2024, that's Jetsons time. Flying cars and made robots. 2024, you mean that's when I'll get a college football playoff, like a real 12-team thing, or maybe they were envisioning some 8-team thing back then or whatever. Yeah, no, it's coming. It's coming way, way down the road. Don't worry. Because there have been, you can go find articles written by people in the 70s and 80s that were like vying for an idea of something that could be put together. Because it was a sport entrenched in its own tradition of you win the bowl game associated with your conference, and that really what matters. And then if voters tell you you won the national championship, so be it. But as people started to realize that television was bringing us closer and the college football world was coming more united, meaning it wasn't just somebody in Alabama watching Alabama and Auburn. It really was somebody in Alabama going, well, golly, now I can watch USC. I can watch Michigan. I can watch – I'm getting games in my living room. So now I'm starting to wonder, is my team as good as that team? Could we beat them? Even if we have no, we're not going to connect at all in the bowl system. And that's when the, you know, people started having these conversations that went nowhere, nowhere fast. So it's one thing to hang on to them, but the bowl system that we have now, I've always said, look, I don't hate it. Like, I don't hate it. Like, some people don't like it. Like, people say to me all the time, all these bowls. I go, don't watch them. No one's forcing you to watch the Bahamas Bowl. Nobody's forcing you to watch the Cheez-It Bowl. Nobody's forcing you to watch anything. Don't watch them. It's holiday
season.
Yeah, I'll
be honest.
Don't watch them.
I don't watch the ones I don't want to. But you know what I love most about it is that, hey, you know what? It's a Tuesday after Christmas, and there's a bowl game. There's college football on.
That's exactly right.
That's the fun part.
They don't have value to whatever it is that other than just being on TV and being having entertainment.
Yeah.
They don't mean something.
And a lot of times the games are terrible.
Right.
But again, it's, you know, like I said, it's a Tuesday after the, you know, midweek during the holiday season, and there's a college football game at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
fantastic.
And that's the thing with the bowl system is that it's a reward for seasons where you're playing and you go, man, we're not great. We're not awesome. But what else can I root for? Like we're 3-3 and four of our next games are impossible. Maybe if I get one of them, we go to a bowl game and it'll be fun. Like that's what it is. When people tell me there's too many bowls, I go, to who? Like seriously, to who? To you? What do you mean? What do you want instead? It's not like they're taking off great television shows at that time of the year. Don't worry, you'll still get your Christmas specials. But I go, who's bothered by this? Like, what is it? Just something to complain about just because you want to complain about it? Okay. But it doesn't impact anything. When you have, like, Georgia Southern facing off against Nevada in some bowl game, it means nothing to the larger picture, but to both schools, it means something. You know, it's a bowl game. And so when people say, okay, get rid of all these bowl games and make a playoff, you can have a playoff and not get rid of the bowl games. It doesn't have to be one or the other. You can have your playoff system and you can still send South Carolina to Shreveport, Louisiana, to play in the Liberty Bowl. It's one half dozen or the other, or whatever it is in Shreveport. You can have one. It's not a plus minus situation. You're going to get 12 teams. You're going to get some system in place. And you know what? If you go 6-6, you can still rock a bowl appearance. I've gone to see South Carolina in bowl games. It's fun. They're fun. You're usually hanging out with people that we're all rooting together. We're all hanging out together in the parking lot. I've seen South Carolina in three bowl games in my lifetime. Two in the same place. Raymond James Stadium, I saw them in the Outback Bowl twice. And then I went to the Birmingham for the PapaJohns.com Bowl against UConn. Great, great times. South Carolina was 2-1 in my presence, by the way. They lost to UConn in that chilly Birmingham day. We got top five, bottom five coming up. Good, bad, and the dumb. More on Deion Sanders from the collapse, the 29-0. I got a question. Is he a good coach? And I think I got an answer. We'll have that for you coming up as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.